You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. After a hiatus due to COVID, the Juno Public Market is back this weekend, and more than 125 vendors are signed up and ready to return to in-person shopping. So joining us now is Peter Metcalf, Juno Public Market organizer. Hi, Peter.
Hi. Thank you for having us on the program.
Mm-hmm. And with us also are two of the vendors who will be set up at the market. First is Caitlin Combs, partner with her sister Melissa in 907 Clothing Company of Haines, Alaska. Hi, Caitlin.
Hello, how are you?
Well, thanks. And we also have Rebecca Poulsen, Sitka artist who produces original wood engraved prints, the Outer Coast calendar, and note cards. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. So thanks everyone so much for being here today. And Peter, let's start with you. Tell me about how Public Market is going to work this year, and how did you come to a decision to go back to being live and in person?
Well, we actually had the market sold out months ago, back when, remember when it was a declining concern, COVID, and then suddenly we had the peak and we learned we had to check vaccinations at the door in order to have the market. That's CBJ requirement for a large event. We could have had the event if we allowed in 20 people, but that wasn't happening. So anyway, we'll be checking vaccinations at the doors. You know, there's some people who are not happy about that, but fortunately they're in the vast minority. If you come to the public market, it's going to be the safest shopping in Juneau. I know that much, because grocery stores don't require vaccination. So everybody that's shopping in the public market and vendors will be vaccinated, and everybody will be wearing a mask. And I've been assured the likelihood of any spread of COVID is really minimal, much less than it would be in any other venue in Juneau. So, and Juneau has very low numbers. We're doing really well. So I'm quite confident. And just to get past the boilerplate, we're opening noon Friday. It'll be from noon to 7 p.m. on Friday, and from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday. $8 admission. Have your vaccination card ready to show us. It can be on a cell phone. Take an image of it and show us on your cell phone. That's acceptable. So we'll get you in the door as quickly as possible, and then you'll be able to shop with vendors who are coming out from all over Alaska. I've been saying from Dillingham to Billingham and beyond. And most of our out-of-town vendors are actually from Southeast Alaska, like Melissa and Rebecca. And we should probably get off me and get on them. That's a lot more interesting.
Well, before we do that, I wanted to also ask, how does it feel to be back in the saddle again as organizer of Public Market?
How does it feel? Well, you know, last year we did a virtual public market, and that was about as much fun as a Zoom meeting. It's being up close and it's being socializing that really makes the public market a lot of fun. And we've been doing it since 1983, so it was really a hole in our. It was like somebody telling you can't do a family reunion, you know, because the vendors have become friends over the years. Many of them have been coming for decades, and so it's just really a fun event. And so it's really good to be getting back to it. And hopefully we're approaching a new normal here.
Right. And one other question about the public market. Traditionally, food and sometimes music or entertainment is a part of it as well. Is that going to be the case this time also?
Yes, actually, the food, well, we have fewer vendors. If I may say, I think we have better vendors. There's some four very professional entree type vendors who will be there in the food court. And we have espresso from the Heritage Company or Heritage Coffee, and also Copa, Mark Wheeler's ice cream operation. So that's looking good. And then I didn't think we'd have musical entertainment, but that has come to fruition. We have Vox Borealis, which is a choral group, which will be performing on Friday and Saturday. And so will the Juno Cello Choir, which is about, I think there's 10 celloists who are coming to the public market and will entertain us again on Friday and Saturday. So we're getting back to it. You know, it was a real challenge to deal with this requirement to check vaccinations at the door, but I think we're over that hump, and we really hope people of Juneau come out and support all these great vendors who are coming to town.
Right. Well, we've covered the boilerplate, and we've covered the entertainment and the food options. So let's turn to what people come to the market for, the goods. Caitlin Combs, let's start with you. You're the co-owner of 907 Clothing Company out of Haines. Tell me a little bit about how you and your sister formed this company.
Hey, well, about, I guess, 7 years ago almost now, I sold my coffee shop. And I was just a stay-at-home mom looking for something to do where I could be more involved with my kids at the same time. And my sister had always wanted to do a clothing line. She did a vinyl decal before. And so she said, hey, draw some designs. Let's make some t-shirts and see what happens. And so we ordered a whole bunch of samples, did the soft test. If everything felt good, you know, everyone likes to feel everything. Then we started printing, and we started printing from home, similar to what our parents did as we grew up. They were always hand stenciling their designs and printing, and we just kind of watched that happen and thought it was a pretty cool process. So we started with just a few designs, got our name out there, called around to different companies around Southeast Alaska and asked if they would want a sample of one of our sweatshirts and tell us what they think. And it just kind of blossomed from there.
So you designed
the... Go ahead, Peter. For a moment. I'm sorry. Melissa was describing to me yesterday about these kind of blankets you do. And that sounded really soft and fun. Why don't you describe that?
The blankets are pretty popular. We just started getting those a couple of years ago, and it's made out of sweatshirt material. So it's like wrapping a giant sweatshirt around you. It's kind of something for everyone. They're neutral colors. And then there's one of our designs on the corner of each blanket. I don't know the exact size, but they stretch, you know, they can be the size of a bed basically. And we take one everywhere. We have one on our boat. We have one at our moose camp. We take it to the beach. My kids steal it from me every chance they get when I'm on the couch. So it's just kind of that perfect gift, you know, if you have a college student going to college, you know, just something, maybe they have too many sweatshirts. Blankets, you can always use another blanket. So.
Well, what are some of the other items that folks might be most familiar with from 907 Clothing?
Well, we have several designs now. I don't know how many exactly, but one of our most popular is the Chilkoot Bear, and we've put that on several shirts, sweatshirts, kids' sweatshirts and t-shirts as well, and we'll have some of those at Public Market. And that design is of a brown bear, and the kind of in the drawing, in the bear itself, is mountain range that overlooks Chilkoot Lake here in Haines, and that's kind of where we have our huge population of brown bears. And it's got the Big Dipper and the moon in there. And that's just been really popular. So we've got that on some really good green sweatshirts at the Public Market. There's some little onesies for anyone expecting babies, sweatshirts, t-shirts, kind of something for everyone. We try and make sure we've got something that will appear to the eye to everyone. So,
do you have a long history of vending at Public Market?
We, I think Melissa and I with 907 have been coming there 5 or 6 years. Our business has started about 7 years ago. So probably 5 or 6 years as 907. I myself have been going probably for closer to 10 years with my mom. She has her booth across from us called Alaska Side, and she does fused glass work. And I started by just kind of selling different crafts that I made, and one year I made extra snugs that were a fleece long sock that had a cuff that would go over when you wear your extra tufts. And I did really well with that. And so that was kind of my first like big year at Public Market. And I was like, man, this is fun. You know, seeing all these people I don't know, just getting to know people. And it's a little bit bigger of a bazaar than what we have in Haines. So I think probably 10 years I've been going.
Oh, that's great. A veteran. So where will your booth be located, and how can we find it? What should we be looking for?
Well, we are always next to the coffee shop. because I love my coffee and that's just favorite. So we're right next to them. We've got two booths set up. You know, I'm not there this year, so I don't know for sure how my sister and her daughters will set it up, but we usually have our sign hanging above that says 907 Clothing Co. And yeah, look for the fun t-shirts and sweatshirts hanging up and the pretty ladies, Melissa, Taylor, Ashlyn.
All right. Thanks so much, Caitlin. Rebecca, turning to you now. Rebecca, first I got to ask you to unmute. And then also I wanted to ask if you would please tell me a little bit about yourself and your artwork.
Well, I'm in Sitka and I do printmaking. I'm actually printing right now their wood engravings. So it's a kind of woodcut.
I know that folks can't see you, but while we've been talking to Peter and Caitlin, I've been watching you. You look like you're in your studio. You're all bundled up. You've got your apron on, and you're keeping busy working while we've been chatting. So, what are you working on at the moment?
I'm printing a few more little wood engraving, and then I'll just print, you know, like 10 or 20 or 40 or 50 prints at a time. I don't print the whole edition. So I'm just printing more of a, it's an image of a fishing boat and some big waves on the other side of Mount Edgecombe.
And what are some of the most popular items that you tend to sell during public market?
It seems like it's really split between note cards and art. I have it framed and I can actually frame stuff there. And then a calendar. I've been publishing a calendar for years and years. And this year, the theme is Sweet Old World.
Say more about the... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's... I think it's really beautiful, and it's printed there at Alaska Litho. And all my note cards are, too, so everything is actually made in Alaska. Which is it's kind of unusual because it does, you know, like cost more, but it feels really good.
People know you from, I think it's called the Outer Coast Calendar. So can you say more about that?
So it's a calendar. It's mostly watercolors. And then I also have wood engravings. And this one, I also have a scratch board drawing. And then poetry. And then this one, it's always like a really loose theme. But this one is, I have a Juno poet, Ishmael Hope, is one of my poets. And then I've been featuring the work of Caroline Goodwin, she's now in California, but Alaskan poets and then dead poets. And, but just kind of around that theme of, how much there is to live for.
How important is public?
Because it's kind of inspired by just how hard it is on our kids right now. And it's just like, you just hear about how, everything being like tough and global warming and everything. And there's a lot to be thankful for, and to enjoy and to love each other.
How important
about how we ramble on, but anyway, so sorry about that. Well, you can buy my calendar.
How important is public market to artists like yourself?
It's pretty big. Yeah, because, in 2020, my big project was, building a website. Because it is, that's where I sell most of my, I sell some stuff at the stores. But a lot of it is, holiday, and there's usually a couple of craft shows in Sitka, but those are all, nothing's happening in Sitka, except some like pop-up things, but yeah, I know that's really important. And I always, so now I'm a rambler honor, and I always have great conversations, yeah, folks that I know, folks that I'm just meeting, you know, about all kinds of things. Yeah.
That's great.
But yeah, and it's really to like meet face to face, like somebody who's like buying the art, you know, because it you know, connects with them somehow. And yeah, there's no substitute. Yeah.
And where will your booth be located?
It's pretty much in the middle. There's sort of a, you know, like almost like a, you know, like a four-way or way on the corner. And in the past, there's been a whole bunch of people. So it's, yeah, like right in that area.
Well, thanks so much, Rebecca, and also Caitlin, for sharing a little bit about your artwork and giving us a preview of what we can look for when we go shopping at Public Market starting this Friday. Peter, back to you. Is there anything you want to say as part of wrap-up of this interview here? Anything else that we forgot to mention?
I just got some good ideas. I think I'm going to look at those blankets that Melissa at 907 Clothing, Caitlin's sister, will be selling, and I always pick up a bundle of greeting cards from Rebecca Polson, and her booth is a corner booth, and you'll see it just as you begin to turn left to go to the food court in the main lobby of Centennial Hall, or rather, I should say, the main room, Sheffield Ballroom, and so we hope everybody will come down. We will be checking for vaccination. Your cell phone image will work for that, and we'll be open at noon Friday.
That's great. And one last question about tickets. Do we buy them at the door? Do we buy them in advance? Is it cash only? Can you take cards?
No, it's pretty much cash at the door. We'll have an admissions table, and we've been working through this, trying to fine-tune it so that we don't hang people up trying to get in the door because of the vaccination cards. But I think we have it worked out, and we'll get you in really quickly.
All right. Peter, Caitlin, Rebecca, thanks so much. Have the best time at Public Market this weekend. Thanks again for being here today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. As part of November National Caregivers Month, Southeast Senior Services has held a weekly series of programs on topics like taking a more loving approach to dementia care or how to navigate senior services. Tomorrow, that's Wednesday, the series wraps up with a webinar on communication tools for caregivers. So joining us now, we have Denise Denny Darby, Family Support Advocate at the Senior and Caregiver Resource Center, which is a program of Southeast Senior Services, and host of the Caregiver Education Speaker Series. Welcome back to the show, Denny.
Well, thank you.
Also with us is Gay Wellman, RN, Education Specialist with Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska, speaker for the Caregiver Education Series session, Communication Tools for Caregivers, which is the one that's going to take place tomorrow. Hello, Gay.
Yes, hello. Thank you for letting me come on this show. It's great.
Of course. Gay, let's start with you. Would you tell me about how you came to be a guest for this Caregiver Education Series?
Well, actually, you were supposed to be hearing from Amber Smith, who is the ARA representative there in Juneau that I'm sure many of you already know. But she unfortunately had a bit of an accident. And so I got asked to take this on. And since it's something that I've talked about before, not exactly like this, but very similar to it, I decided I could do it. So it will be different than Amber's, but hopefully it will be it gives you sharing the right kind of information.
Well, how did you get into this line of work?
Ha! You ask. it was kind of one of these jobs that fell into my lap, which is wonderful, but it fit with everything else that I've done in my life as far as working career and otherwise, as far as that's concerned. I started out first working in substance abuse and then in an inpatient program as an RN, and then moved into mental health. So I was working with folks with the brain changes that mental health brings on. And then I started working out here when I moved out to the Kenny Lake Copper Center area. I worked at the Native community there, the Copper River Native Association. And there I was working with folks with substance abuse, mental health, and fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, all of which change our brains, right? And then I sort of had the wonderful opportunity to work out of my home. I got hired by Alzheimer's Resource, and I was their girl Friday out here, is the way I call it. And it's been, that was about 14 years ago now. And it's been an absolute wonderful way of finishing out my working career. Everything fits.
Oh, that's great to hear. Sounds like you'll be a good fit for the talk tomorrow. So there's another speaker in the series that I interviewed a couple of weeks ago. She addressed dementia, but emphasized that there are many causes of dementia, of which Alzheimer's is only one. So she made a pretty clear distinction there. And I wanted to ask you, what's important about focusing specifically on Alzheimer's?
Actually, we don't try to do that. I know our title is Alzheimer's Resource of Alaska, but that was because the women who started it back in the 80s were taking care of their mother who had Alzheimer's. And so it just sort of a natural fit for them to have that name. But we address all the dementias, that there really isn't any, there's differences, and you need to know the differences in order to really communicate well with folks with whatever particular type of dementia it is. But basically, brain change is brain change is brain change. Mm. And yes, there may be variations of the theme, but the theme and how one addresses it are basically the same as far as the caregiver is concerned. Their main reasons, you know, that they don't really need to know the differences. It can help in some situations, but they don't really need to know the differences to be a good caregiver.
So the title of your talk is Communication Tools for Caregivers. What are some of the things that you'll be going over?
Well, actually, what I'm hoping to do is look at not just communication for folks working with folks with dementia, but also looking at how do we communicate with medical professionals and other providers in addition. So it's using the same tools in many ways. We're going to be taking, you know, some of the objectives of this talk are going to be brief review of key points about communicating with someone with dementia. But my understanding from Denny, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Denny, is that the caregivers that I'll be speaking to, and I think I'm going to be speaking mainly to caregivers, is that they already have a good understanding of dementias. I like to go over it briefly anyway, so we'll be doing that, and we'll be giving some pointers of general pointers of what is good communication techniques for folks like that. But I also want to look at what to consider when you're talking with your family. You know, just because I'm the primary caregiver doesn't mean that my family is going to understand. And so how do I share that information with my family? And then also how do I communicate what I need to communicate with medical providers? How do I really advocate for my loved one? Because unfortunately, too many of the medical providers don't have a thorough understanding of what dementia really is, or the fact that it's you as a caregiver are also a very important piece of the puzzle, and that they need to be thinking of you as part of the, as along with your loved one. In other words, they need to be treating you, essentially, giving you the support you need. And unfortunately, a lot of medical providers, I won't say most, but a lot of medical providers don't understand that piece. And so they focus on the person with dementia, but they don't necessarily listen to what the needs are or listen to the input that the family caregiver needs to give. And so I'll be speaking with what can you do to help bridge that gap? How do you get their attention? And that's true of other providers, people who are working in assisted living homes. And especially nowadays with the COVID, where so many of the facilities that we have been in lockdown. So the caregivers aren't able to get in and see what's really happening. So how do you communicate with staff caregivers in these facilities that are, we all know that they're totally overwhelmed. The stresses that these folks are under is immense. And so it doesn't help if I, as a caregiver, get upset with them for not taking care of my loved one adequately. So I need to figure out whew, take the deep breath. What do I need to do to be able to reach the staff in these facilities? Same with a medical professional. You know, when you get a medical professional that's ignoring what your input is, and you're the one that's at home 24/7, and they're saying, well, he looks fine to me. You know, how do you get their attention and say, well, he's not fine, you know, besides jumping up and down. And of course, jumping up and down doesn't ever do us any good. It may feel good. It may feel good at the moment, but as far as communication, it's all about connection. And actually the title that I've given this particular talk is Honoring Connection, the dementia and communication, because you can't communicate with people unless you've established a connection. So how do we do that?
It sounds
how do we
like
do this thing.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of touch points that a caregiver needs to make sure they've got covered, and it can be difficult to lose track and frustrating, as you said, to communicate the needs of your loved one and the needs of yourself. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's one more point that I'd just like to make sure that out there is that, you know, when we're under stress, when we're frightened, or when we're feeling like we're being attacked, the part of our brain that gets triggered, and we don't really have a whole lot of control over the trigger, is that part of the brain that's called the amygdala. And that's that fight, flight, freeze. Then, you know, when you get that jolt of, ooh, I'm scared, you're going to get that feeling of, I can't deal with this. And you can't think. There's a chemical that gets released that makes it so you really cannot think. And this what's happening right now in the world is not only, you know, it's just compounding that. But for folks who are dealing with someone with dementia, they're going to be attacked. They're going to feel like they're being attacked. And so they have to learn how to regain control over that amygdala. They have to regain, how do I use my frontal lobe? My loved one can no longer do that, but I have to. And so what do I need to do to be able to do that in a moment's notice? And it can be very, very challenging. That's part of what we'll be talking about.
Well, that sounds like it's just good life advice. I'd kind of like to know how to do
Absolutely.
That myself. I can think of a few situations.
Yeah. You just hit the nail on the head right there. You know, you really did. Because that's all these tools that we talk about are ones that we all should be using anyway in our life.
Denny, what would you add? What do you think are some of the, what do you think are some of the takeaways that the caregivers will appreciate from hearing Gay speak tomorrow?
Well, I think what Gay brought up about the need for caregivers to be addressed as well. I think one of the things that Laura Wayman in her talk a couple of weeks ago, an interesting statistic that she brought up was because caregivers don't get the care that they need or take care of themselves, 63% of all caregivers die before the person they're caring for. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting statistic. And I think it's something that everybody should kind of go, oh, okay, that means more than half. And, you know, it's something for people who are caring for those loved ones to really pay attention to, in what Gay was talking about, you know, what kind of resources can I use to help me? And especially at, like Gay said, in the time of COVID, we're having to really think outside the box now, because the types of resources and organizations that used to help us are understaffed, or we can't get into that organization, or there's so many roadblocks. So caregivers really have to get creative right now.
And Denny, how do you feel about the series wrapping up? This will be the finale tomorrow. How do you feel
well,
that it went?
You know, I think for the first year, I think it's been really terrific. At first, I was a little like, oh, there's not enough people attending the webinar kind of thing. But the amount of people that call and email us afterwards and look for the recorded webinar on Facebook or on YouTube is tremendous. Plus, these webinars are now out there and they can be used as an educational tool. So it's a great thing. We're really happy about it.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, and I'm sure you must be relieved that you've come to the end of your weeks of joining me on the show here and talking about the series, but I'm glad to hear that it went the way you wanted it to. And tell us, where can we find these recordings or sign up to watch the talk tomorrow at 4?
Okay, so if you want to tune into the webinar live, and if you want that, that means you can ask questions in the Q&A and in the chat. Go to ccsak.org, and in the upper right-hand corner, it will say Caregivers Education Series 2021. Just go through the prompts. If you don't currently have Zoom, you'll have to download it, but you can do it while you're logging on. It's really easy. If you want to watch one of the recorded versions, go to our Facebook page. And on the left-hand side, click on videos, and the first three webinars are already there. Or you can go on YouTube and just, you know, click in the search engine and click in Catholic Community Services, Dementia, or, you know, just the keywords to get to that. And you can watch the webinar there as well.
So is the Facebook page under Catholic Community Service or Southeast Senior Services?
It's under Catholic Community Services, yep. And Great. Just look under videos, and there we are.
Great. Gay, is there anything else that you want to add or mention about your talk tomorrow that you want to make sure people know before they attend?
Well, I hope we'll find it useful, and I really appreciate that. I think what Denise and the association has done is wonderful, that they're putting this kind of information out that way. I think it's great. And we all need to know what's happening here. And hopefully you'll pick up some tips, even if you're not caring for someone with dementia, you'll pick up some tips to how to deal with the stresses of COVID, the stresses of the world today. How to keep our frontal lobes working.
That sounds super interesting. Well, I just want to thank you both for joining me today, and I hope you have a good time and a good turnout for your talk tomorrow. And thanks for doing this series, and thanks for being on the show every week to talk about it.
Yeah.
All right.
Till next time.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. Gunatchish is a weekly radio celebration of Alaska Native languages, especially the endangered Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian. Listeners hear conversations, songs, stories, and much more. With me now is the host and producer and mastermind of Gunatchish from Sitka, Alaska. Welcome, Kirganzi Frederick Olson Jr. Wasayeti.
Hawa. Sinudung hidung dilagung hawa. I was saying, how are you? In the Haida language, you don't really say hello. You say, how are you, if you directly translate it. But that is the Haida way of saying hello. Sinudung hidung. And then often the reply is dilagung. And then a lot of times, if you're really good, instead of putting other words in there, you just stretch it out, like dilagung. And then people know you mean, I'm feeling really good. And you're kind of playful about it.
Dilagan. And in Tlingit, I would say Aktawu Sigu, Aktawu Yake. Thank you. Gnashchish. Tell us a little bit about yourself for starters.
Kyuthgansi Hinodikyaang. In the Haida language, my name means place of one's own. I'm also a member of the Skudja Uth clan, which is an eagle moiety with beaver, frog, and sculpin crests. Well, I was born in Ketchikan, and both of my parents were born in Ketchikan. My dad's from the Haida village of Kasan, which is on Prince of Wales Island. But I went to grade school and junior high school in Ketchikan, and then I went to Juno Douglas High School and graduated from Juno Douglas High School, and then I went to Seattle University.
And how did you get into broadcasting?
Oh, boy. It's a long, long story. The short version is I got into photography, and I went to school for photography in Santa Barbara, California, the Brooks Institute. And I was emphasizing film and video, and that's what I had a career of in New York City, was as a cinematographer, a digital cinematographer doing video. We did a lot of TV work, and I was in New York for 15 years, and I even taught 2 years at the School of Visual Arts, digital cinematography, and so that has helped me with the radio side, because the software you use is very similar, except in a way it's maybe simpler because you don't have to worry about the video.
Your show, Gunatchish, which we're going to talk all about, but backing up a little bit, would you please tell me how the idea for this show came about?
It's interesting. I moved to Sitka, and because I met a beautiful woman and fell in love, and I moved to Sitka, and I found out about the radio station, and a friend of my girlfriend's was very involved, and so I went to, I'm not sure if it was the official annual meeting, but it was a meeting of the board of the radio station, KCAW Sitka, and I was saying, you know, it was then 2019, and the United Nations had declared 2019 as the year of Indigenous languages, and I have a lot of background in recording, especially Haida, but I had some experience recording Tlingit language, and it just is like a passion for me. It's something I've really been involved in for a few decades, actually. And so it kind of all came together. I was at this board meeting, and I was just lobbying that it would be good if there was more Indigenous languages on the air. And so, you know, there was a lot of nodding of heads, and people thought that was a good idea. But I could tell it was not really going to happen. Like, people liked the idea, but it's not like somebody at the table went, oh, yeah, let's do it. I'll help, or I want to. And so then, you know, of course, the meeting ended, and I just thought a lot about it. And they had some training coming up, and I thought, what the heck? And so I took the training. It was just a few hours, you know, a couple different days. And then before you knew it, you were doing your first show. And then I was able to get my time slot. And we started out in Sitka on Thursday nights at 10 p.m. or after the 10 o'clock news. And the reason I named the show Gunash Chish was a couple reasons. One, it's like a thank you to Sitka, you know, for my wife, Blossom. But then also, you know, for having this show, and we are on Tlingit territory, we're on Tlingit land here in Sitka, and so I thought that was a really good, simple name, Gunash Chish, for the show.
Do you produce the show on a volunteer basis?
Oh, yeah, that's one of the many challenges. Yeah, it's from the very beginning and up to the moment, it's completely all volunteer, and my very hardworking staff of me, myself, and I are very dedicated to the production. And it's interesting, you know, you just get into the grind, just you put your head down and you do something each week, and then all of a sudden, wow, you've done 113 shows. You know, it's kind of amazing.
113 is that's a lot. It's quite a milestone. And producing a show, a weekly one-hour show, is a lot of work, as you know. I was wondering what made you decide that's the best medium for your message.
One reason, there's a lot of material. There's a lot of audio. And then also the opportunity. You know, the station is very encouraging, very accommodating, and fit us into the schedule. And it has such a broad coverage. And I think radio also, especially, you know, these days, when you start talking about video, you don't have the centralization you used to have a long time ago with the major networks or even with the public access station. You know, now there's so many streaming options. There's YouTube. You know, someone could have a YouTube channel, but there's something about just driving in your car and hearing the language, or just, you know, washing the dishes, hearing the language, hear some songs, hear the language again. I think there's something to that. It promotes the normalization of hearing the language. Or I think TV or visual, you more have to sit there and watch it. Not that that's a bad thing, of course. You know, I've do my fair share of watching things. But this, it gives the viewer, the listener, a lot more options also.
You mentioned that 2019, the United Nations declared it the Year of Indigenous Languages. What is the status of Alaska Native languages, especially here in Southeast?
Alaska made 20 Indigenous languages official languages of the state. But, you know, you don't see Haida at the voting ballots or at the ballot box, or you don't see, you know, Tlingit on a Coke can. So, you know, it's one of those, what do you say, an unfunded mandate where the state had said that, and it's a feel-good moment, and it's not to be, you know, really dismissed, but at the same point, you know, we don't have street signs in Tlingit or these kinds of things yet. Some places, like in Heidelberg, Alaska, they have Haida on the street signs, which is sometimes fun because the Haida word makes the street sign have to be 3 feet long, you know, instead of the English word might be shorter. That's another, you know, of course, one of the tough things, or maybe it makes me an unlikely person, is, you know, I'm not fluent in any of the languages. But, you know, I don't know that you have to be fluent in that to make the show. And I try to be as respectful as possible, you know, with where I make the breaks in the conversations.
How do you piece together a show? What are some of the key elements that you make sure you have in each episode of Gunaschish?
Definitely has spoken language, whether that's one spoken, like sometimes a show might only have spoken Tlingit or spoken Haida or spoken Tsimshian, and then songs, but they also have songs. I think some of the very early shows, they were really hardcore, you know, just because the idea, again, the idea is to have the languages heard on the land and the language, not Morse code. Like, we're not trying to tell you word for word what they said and then hear it. That's not the same thing. You know, no one does that for you when you listen to Fresh Air, or that no one translates Mick Jagger for you when you listen to the Rolling Stones. You know, you listen to them. But what I've grown to is to give the listener more of a break, especially, of course, people who don't know the language. It might be a bit much to hear 40 minutes straight, you know, but that's fine. You know, you hear 40 minutes straight of English lots of times. And instead of just playing clips of songs, I play the whole song. And so those are the two main elements of every show, are spoken language and music or songs. And I try to have as little translation as possible, but I do have some, because I do know context can be important. You know, just to know what they're talking about a little bit is helpful to people, and people enjoy that. And I try to do that, but sometimes I don't know. And I think that's fine.
Yeah, okay, I agree. So you've done 113 episodes, I think you said. What are some of the most impactful or memorable moments you've had on your show so far? Is there anything that really stands out to you?
That's a tough one. Oh, some of the things, it was really neat that KSTK Wrangell asked about the show. That was very fun. You know, they asked if they could air the show. That was very nice. And then it's great that KRBD in Ketchikan airs the show. And so getting the broader regional coverage, you know, just so more people can hear the languages on the territory that those languages were spoken on for hundreds of years. And it's had some impact on me. I've gotten a little better with pronunciation. I also, this year it didn't work out, but last year I took Dr. Twitchell's, he had a 5-week, the massive online course with Outer Coast. And there's a lot of resources online that people can tap into. And you know, just hearing the language more has had an impact. Doing the show, it's hard, you know, to keep doing it. And sometimes I wonder why I'm doing it, but it just, I'm compelled to do it. So that's interesting to me. And then hearing some of the folks who have, you know, now passed away, like, you know, Selena Iverson, not to play favorites, but, you know, she was someone I knew a little bit. And then she had a great conversation with Helen Sarabia, and they have a baby on there. And a lot of people really like that conversation.
What would you say to our listeners who may be hearing the show for the first time?
Give it a chance. Don't worry if you don't know Tlingit at all, or if you just know a little bit. You probably like music. And if you don't like something, it won't be on there that long. You know, someone might only be talking Tlingit for 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 8 minutes, and then there'll be another song. But I appreciate people listening. I do think it's important that we hear our Alaska Native languages as much as possible. And it's great to hear in different settings. Like, don't think you have to listen to it at your desk. Go for a hike. Listen to it. You know, also, I also did start a podcast. It's great that Juno's going to air it in the afternoon, and hopefully you'll have more people have a chance to listen that way. But I do have a podcast also. It's on 8 different platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You know, you could look up ones you like, and under Gunashchish. And so that way you don't have to listen at a certain time. But it's nice that, you know, if it comes on at 3 o'clock, whatever you're doing, just listen. And don't even worry about what they're saying. Just, you know, you'll learn. You'll absorb it.
Big thanks to a big Gunashchish to Kirkansi, host of Gunashchish, which airs Mondays at 3 o'clock here on KTOO 104.3 and repeats at 7 p.m. on Monday nights as well. Also available wherever you get your podcasts.